the Literary Corner Black Writers of the World, a series of analyses and interpretations of Black world literature. Today, an introduction to Afro-American poetry with Professor of English and Poet in Residence in Ethnic Studies at California State University, Sacramento, Eugene Redman. Redman has to his credit over 11 works in literature, the most popular of which are Drum Voices, Mission of Afro-American Poetry, Genoa and the Green Stone, and River of Bones, Flesh and Blood. In part one of this introduction to Afro-American poetry, Redman concluded his presentation with Paul Laurence Dunbar and the period immediately preceding the Harlem Renaissance. Today he begins with the Harlem Renaissance and concludes with the poets of the 1970s.
The Harlem Renaissance represented the first real peak. And when I say peak, I'm talking about, you know, media attention, the opening up of publishing outlets. Big white publishing houses for the first time in history opened their doors or their printing presses to black writers. And it also coincided with a broader cultural revival in black America, as well as in the United States, as well as in the world. Mm-hmm. And it was spurred on by nationalist movements in Europe and Africa. But the poets held the day. Poetry is a very restricted, brief form. It stresses the economy of language. You must go to the heart of the subject, you know, in two or three lines. And so people like Claude McKay, Langston Hughes, County Cullen, Gene Toomer, lesser writers or lesser known people, Honor Bontoms, Sterling Brown, Ann Spencer, Georgia Douglas Johnson, splendid writers.
What about James Weldon Johnson?
James Weldon Johnson, fine poet, one of the older of the Renaissance writers. He had already come to fruition as a poet, at least in one stage of his development, at the turn of the century, you know, having written the very important, extremely important work, Lift Your Voice and Sing, in 1900, which was put to music by his brother, J. Rosamond Johnson, and which was widely known in the United States as the Negro National Anthem, later the Black National Anthem, right?
Yes.
But James Weldon Johnson, in addition to being a major writer, creator of the era, was also one of the chroniclers, one of the important chroniclers of the Harlem Renaissance, one of the people who recorded what occurred,
yes.
Who discussed it. The first important black literary critic.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most important anthology of the era, the first anthology of Afro-American poetry in English in the 20th century, in 1922, the Book of American Negro Poetry.
The Creation by James Weldon Johnson. And God stepped out on space, and he looked around and said, "I'm lonely. I'll make me a world." And far as the eye of God could see, darkness covered everything, blacker than 100 midnights down in a cypress swamp. Then God smiled, and the light broke, and the darkness rolled up on one side, and the light stood shining on the other, and God said, "That's good." Then God reached out and took the light in his hands, and God rolled the light around in his hands until he made the sun. And he set that sun a-blazing in the heavens, and the light that was left from making the sun, God gathered up in a shining ball and flung against the darkness, spangling the night with the moon and stars. Then down between the darkness and the light, he hurled the world. And God said, "That's good."
Out of the Harlem Renaissance and into the 40s and 50s, more formal kinds of black or black American, African American, Afro-American poets came onto the scene, people like Gwendolyn Brooks and so on.
Right, sure. Gwendolyn Brooks, interestingly enough, had met James Weldon Johnson when she was a little girl, I think 12 years old, in a church basement. You know, that was typical. You know, you'd meet a Hughes or James Weldon Johnson or Sterling Brown, you know, at a church social. You know, that's the way we made it. That's mm-hmm. that's our training ground. And But yes, Gwendolyn Brooks wrote her first poem, I think, when she was around 13 or so, started writing. And the most honored black poet of all time, of course, Gwendolyn Brooks, the first to be honored at that official American level,
mm-hmm.
when in 1950 she won the Pulitzer Prize for Annie Allen. Yeah. But the 30s and 40s and 50s were crucial decades for Afro-American poets. Lots of poetry was being written, but it was not reflected in book published form,
mm-hmm.
as, say, were the poems of the 1920s, you know. The poets to emerge from this period, of course, were people like Frank Marshall Davis, Robert Hayden, very fine, extremely brilliant and important. Hayden should have gotten the Pulitzer a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You had M. Carl Holman, who was one of the founders of the Atlanta Daily World.
Mm-hmm.
Gwendolyn Brooks, of course, held sway during that day. Melvin Tolson, the first American poet to be made poet laureate of a foreign country. That was Liberia in the late 40s. It was commissioned, right. You know, to write its centennial poetic, you know, tribute.
Yes.
And he came up with a fine piece called Libretto for the Republic of Liberia.
Now, some people, and you express the importance of the 30s, 40s, and 50s as key decades for African-American poets. Some people consider that as a kind of calm before the storm, meaning the 60s.
You had an interesting kind of gestation period in the 50s where you had people like Lance Jeffers,
mm-hmm.
Percy Johnston, Jay Wright, Henry Dumas, and many, many others, Leroy Jones, his name, Clarence Major, Ted Jones, J-O-A-N-S.
Mm-hmm.
You had Bob Kaufman, the brilliant poet who helped make the Beat era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wrote from San Francisco primarily, published an exciting book called Solitudes Crowded with Loneliness. You had Russell Atkins. These were the germinating forces, and as the decade of the 50s made the turn into the 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you had the early 60s people, very important writers who formed kind of a gestation base for the later writers of the later 60s, people like Larry Neal and mm-hmm. Liberator Magazine, John Henry Clark, and Freedom Waves Magazine.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Again, Negro Digest, before it became Black World in 1970, with Hart Fuller and Hamilton Bimbs. Julia Fields was writing, Mari Evans was writing. So you had this period in the early 1960s where, again, the literary expression reflected the social turbulence of the time. So a lot of the poems dealt with what? Civil rights, freedom rides, you know, sit-ins, the March on Washington, jobs and freedom, okay? Black and white together, we shall overcome.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, around 1965, with Watts and Newark, and Harlem, and St. Louis, and Dallas, Detroit, something else occurred. The writers who had been associated with SNCC and CORE and NAACP Youth Council and so on took to the streets, literally to the streets. They'd been in the streets, but then they started forming their own organizations. They found that they were limited by national guidelines and so on. And these writers who had apprenticed as shock troops,
mm-hmm.
with you know, these other these traditional civil rights organizations, started to develop their own, you know, various groups, paramilitary units, black arts groups, clubs, organizations, ideological enclaves, workshops, thought sessions where they developed new mythologies, new legends, new ideas. And so what you had was what we call now the Black Arts Movement.
Yeah.
The Black Arts Movement. And the key figures there, of course, were Roland Snellings, now known as Oscar Muhammad Torre, Larry Neal, Ed Bullins, Leroy Jones, we mentioned, now known as Imam Muammar de Baraka, Donnell Lee, now known as Hakiar Ahmadu Bhuti. Stemming from these various organizations, some of them outlined against what Neal called a panorama of violence,
mm-hmm.
were, of course, the new literary factories, you know, places where what books were published, magazines were published, poster poems were published, older books reissued, such as what Third World Press is doing, in a situation like with a Chancellor Williams, you know, or a Cheek Ante Diop, you know.
In a kind of summary way, we are now in the 70s, almost into the 80s. Who are some of the prominent writers of the 70s, black or African-American poets of the 70s, and some that are coming onto the scene that are new, that most of our audience might not be familiar with?
Sure, okay. Some of the writers who are prominent, of course, are the names I've already mentioned, you know, and you had, you know, different wings veering off from this idea of black expression. Some writers didn't subscribe exclusively to the idea of a black aesthetic, but you have like a Michael Harper, you have a Robert Hayden still writing, a Gwendolyn Brooks is still writing, you have a Jay Wright still writing, you have a Mari Evans, a Julia Fields, a June Jordan, The Things I Do in the Dark, she was the title of her latest book, still writing. You have younger writers like an E. Ethelbert Miller at Howard University. You have a Jody Braxton. Sometimes I think of Merlin as her name of her book. You have a fine young woman poet named Eloise Lofton, Jumbish, name of one of her works. We have literally developed the idea to the point, the idea of a black writer, to the point that little children are beginning to think more naturally about writing as a career, about being a poet.
Yeah.
When I was a child, black and poet didn't go together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they rarely went together. And historically, the words black and poet,
or black and writer,
or black and writer, have not gone together. You know, have not been a comfortable thing. Now, they have always been there because black people have always gone and heard the poet in the church, the poet in the blues hall, the poet in the barber shop, the poet in the beauty shop, the poet in the pool room, the poet on the corner, the poet in the cornfield, the
poet everywhere,
the poet driving spikes, driving cabs, but in the packing house, you know, slaughtering hogs. But we had to spell it out so that, hey, griot, poet, oral historian, all the same, they're all the same. I can never unlove you. To not want is to not exist, is to be demanded, is to be disembodied, is to be disimpersoned and float like an apparition into the nowhere, into the gray whim of limbo. And that is why I can never unlove you. Why I can never dismantle my passion, why I can never decompose my desire, is to be made breathless by outside strictures and nod in noon sun like a drunken lizard, a slitherless drip on the echo of love, on the back of some nomadic breeze, on the coattail of sanity. And that is why I can never unlove you, why I can never unnotice the flames you forge, why I can never unloose my eyes from their aim. I can never unlove you, though I can relove you before another moon. I can never unneed you, though I can regrieve the night-stained caresses. I can never not want you, though I can recry the oldest ocean. I can never unlove you. Unlove you, never. Unlove you, never. Unlove you, never.
I Can Never Unlove You by black American poet Eugene Redmond. You've heard the second of a two-part introduction to Afro-American poetry on the Literary Corner, Black Writers of the World. Technical assistance provided by Bob Cham. I'm Brooks Robinson. The Literary Corner was made possible by funds from WHA Radio, Madison, Wisconsin, a service of the University of Wisconsin Extension.